All right, let's jump into a deep dive today into the hill country of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to figure out why this area was so important, you know, to all those well-known stories from the Bible. And get this, we're going to use geography to kind of decode it all. It's like we've got this secret decoder ring that's going to unlock all this cool stuff hidden in those stories. Our source material for this deep dive is an academic lecture from a course called Introduction to Biblical Studies by Dr. Elaine Phillips. Specifically, Session 7, which focuses on the Hill Country.
You know, when you really start to look at the Hill Country, you realize it's not just some random piece of land. It's actually divided into three distinct regions, Manasseh, Ephraim, and Benjamin. And each one has its own special geology. And believe it or not, that actually influenced like where people settled and how they defended themselves and even the way those stories, you know, from the Bible actually happened.
That's what I'm talking about. A real deep dive. So let's start with Manasseh. Dr. Phillips talks about these amazing peaks and strategic valleys. And right in the middle of it all, you've got the ancient city of Shechem. It's nestled between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Talk about a dramatic setting. But it's not just about the scenery, is it?
No, Shechem is super important in biblical history, especially when you think about the idea of covenant. According to Joshua 8 and 24, it's where the Israelites went after they got into the promised land to kind of like renew their promise with God. Can you imagine what that was like? Blessings coming from Mount Gerizim, curses from Mount Ebal, and the people right there in the middle having to literally choose, you know, between life or death. This wasn't just signing on the dotted line. It was this super intense, earth-shaking experience.
Wow, that's powerful. It's like the landscape itself is a part of the story. Oh, but there's more to it. Dr. Phillips mentions that they found a temple on Mount Ebal. And it might even be from that time period.
Yeah, and it's created a ton of debate. Some scholars think that maybe this was where they made sacrifices as part of that covenant ceremony. It's like, if those stones could talk right, what stories would they tell?
I love that about archaeology. It's like a puzzle, but the stakes are way higher. It's not just about the past. It's about understanding where we come from, you know, our own beliefs. Okay, so we've got covenant ceremonies and ancient temples, but wait, there's more. Manasseh was also like the center of all this political drama, right?
Oh, yeah. The capital moved around a lot. From Shechem to Tirzah, and then finally to Samaria. Each move shows you how things were changing in the northern kingdom. And that move to Samaria under King Omri, that's a really interesting one. He picked a city on a hilltop, easy to defend, but it also showed that he was open to influence from other places, especially from the Phoenicians over on the coast.
And that had some pretty big consequences down the line, like Omri's son Ahab married Jezebel, a Phoenician princess, and she brought Baal worship with her. Dr. Phillips says that it wasn't just about personal beliefs. It was about making Baal worship the official religion.
And that set the stage for some big showdowns with the prophets of Yahweh. The prophets saw all this worshiping of foreign gods as a threat to the covenant, like they were betraying who they were as God's chosen people. It's a classic example of how political stuff, even stuff that doesn't seem religious, is always tied to religious beliefs.
And what's crazy is that you can still see pieces of this history in the landscape today. Like Shechem. Now it's the modern city of Nablus. It's still sitting between Ebal and Gerizim. It's like those ancient struggles are still echoing, you know, in the present. So Manasseh is about these huge peaks, deep valleys, covenant drama, and political shakeups. But what about Ephraim? How's it different from Manasseh?
Well, remember how we talked about the geology of each region? Ephraim is mostly hard limestone, so it's way more rugged and easier to defend. Think of it like this. Deep valleys shaped like a V, natural barriers, a sense of security, and that drew people to this area.
And one place that really benefited from that was Shiloh, right? Dr. Phillips describes it as a refuge, the place they chose to get the Ark of the Covenant. Especially during those early years when the Israelites were just getting settled. It's like they were protecting the crown jewels.
Exactly. The Ark was a symbol of God being with his people. It was like the ultimate symbol of their relationship with God. And Shiloh, with all that rough terrain, offered protection, a safe haven. Because, you know, the world back then was often a pretty dangerous place.
But even with all those natural defenses, Ephraim still had conflict, right? Dr. Phillips talks about the conquest narrative happening there, with battles for important cities like Bethel and Ai.
And then you've got that crazy story of the Gibeonites. They tricked the Israelites into making a treaty with them, and that ended up causing a huge conflict with Jerusalem. You know, when you look at the geography, it's not just about who has the bigger army. It's about who controls the important routes, those strategic passes.
It's like a game of chess. but with way higher stakes. Every move, every battle is about getting resources, controlling land, and in the end, it's about shaping the destiny of an entire people. So Ephraim is all about rugged landscapes, natural defenses, and those strategic moves that come with controlling important routes and cities. But what about Benjamin? What makes it stand out?
Well, Benjamin is actually the smallest of the three, but its location is super strategic. Think of it as this tiny place that has a huge impact. It controls important routes, including access to Jerusalem. And that central Benjamin Plateau, well, it was a battleground pretty much throughout history as we know it from the Bible.
Dr. Phillips mentions that that plateau was like a big target during the conquest and then again during the divided monarchy. Like everybody wanted a piece of Benjamin.
They did. And one of the most interesting stories about that is the Philistine incursion into Benjamin. It's in 1 Samuel. They went deep into Israelite territory and reached Geba and Michmash. This wasn't just a raid. It was a full-on invasion threatening the very heart of the nation.
And that's where Jonathan, Saul's son, comes in.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. What's cool about that story is how he and his armor bearer use the landscape to their advantage. They use this natural pass, it's called a crag in the text, to sneak into the Philistine camp and launch a surprise attack. It's like a biblical version of special forces.
Exactly. It's a classic example of how understanding the terrain, the little details of the landscape, can change who wins a battle. And what's amazing is that this pass at Michmash, as Dr. Phillips calls it, shows up again later in the Bible. It's almost like an echo of this earlier conflict.
You're talking about the prophecy in Isaiah 10, right? Mm-hmm. The prophet describes the Assyrians, a way more powerful empire. They follow a similar path, moving through the same territory, and they end up threatening Jerusalem.
Yeah.
It's as if the geography itself is kind of hinting at these cycles of conflict that keep happening.
It is. And that conflict between King Asa of Judah and King Baasha of Israel that Dr. Phillips talks about, that also happened on the central plateau. It all comes down to how important a specific city was.
Right. Ramah was like a crossroads, controlling the important trade and communication lines. When Baasha took it over, he basically cut off Jerusalem's access to the north. It was a smart move, but it forced Asa to do something. And what's interesting is that Asa, who had relied on God for victory before, this time he turned to a human alliance with Syria.
He did. He basically paid the Syrians to attack Baasha from the north. So Baasha had to pull his troops back from Ramah. Then Asa fortified Geba and Mizpah, which created a defensive line around the city. If you just look at the military strategy, it was a good move.
But there's always more to the story, right?
Yeah.
The Book of Chronicles tells us that a prophet actually called Asa out.
He did.
He reminded him of his victory against the Ethiopians, back when he only relied on God's power. The prophet was saying that Asa's actions, even though they made sense strategically, were a sign that he wasn't trusting God enough. It's like he forgot the lessons he had learned, you know, the very foundation of their relationship with God.
And that's a really powerful reminder for us, isn't it? That even when we're dealing with politics and military strategy, there's this deeper spiritual side to things. It's about remembering who we are, where our true strength comes from. And what's fascinating is that this central Benjamin Plateau, this ancient battleground, is still important today. Dr. Phillips points out that after the 1967 war, Jerusalem, they annexed a big chunk of this territory for security reasons. It shows you how important this region still is, a significance that goes all the way back to biblical times and continues to modern geopolitics.
Wow, it's amazing how these stories from so long ago are still shaping our world today. It's like the Hill Country is this living, breathing reminder of the power of place. So Benjamin is small but mighty, controlling important routes, always facing conflict, and acting as this crucial buffer zone for Jerusalem. It's incredible how understanding the geography of this area just makes those biblical narratives come alive. But we're just getting started. Up next, we'll dive deeper into the stories and characters that make this hill country so fascinating.
Makes you think, huh, how the geography of the hill country shaped more than just the battles and politics, but even the faith and culture of the people who live there.
Right. It's like the landscape is telling us these ancient stories. So let's listen in. Let's focus on some of those stories and the people in them. Starting with that covenant ceremony at Shechem, can you tell us about that? It really captured my imagination.
Well, we talked about it a bit earlier. It's a really important moment for the Israelites, you know, on their journey. It's described in detail in Joshua 8 and 24. They've just conquered the land and they gather at Shechem between those huge mountains to basically say, we're sticking with God and his laws. But it wasn't just a legal thing. It was an act with deep meaning. You know, symbolic.
Dr. Phillips really makes that come alive. Yeah. She describes it as this huge spectacle, blessings from Mount Gerizim, curses from Mount Ebal. I can almost feel how heavy that choice was.
Exactly. This was a time when oral tradition was everything. This ceremony, with those mountains as the backdrop, it would have stayed in their minds forever.
And it's amazing to think about that temple they might have found on Mount Ebal. It's like we're looking back in time, trying to figure out how they did those rituals. Why would they have a temple on one of the mountains?
That's a great question, and there are a few ideas about that. Some scholars think it was like a central place of worship for the tribes. Others think it was specifically for that covenant ceremony. Maybe they said the blessings from the temple platform on Gerizim and the curses came from Ebal. We don't know for sure yet, but that's what makes archaeology so cool. It's like being a detective, each new thing you find gives you another clue.
It's like we're piecing together the story of their faith. Okay, so we've got these ceremonies, maybe temples on mountainsides. But Shechem wasn't just a religious center, was it? We talked about how the capital city kept moving from Shechem to Tirzah and then to Samaria. Why did they keep moving it?
Each move tells a story. Tirzah might have been a temporary move when things weren't stable, but Samaria, King Omri's choice, that was a whole new direction for the northern kingdom.
It's interesting because Samaria wasn't just a practical choice. It was built on a hill that Omri bought from a guy named Shemer. And naming it Samaria, which means watchtower, seems intentional, almost like a challenge.
Exactly. It showed strength and ambition, but it also opened them up to those influences from other cultures that we talked about. And that's what led to Baal worship becoming so popular under Ahab and Jezebel.
And their story is so dramatic. You've got these religions clashing, power struggles, a whole dynasty falling apart.
And it all happens in Samaria. Ahab built this incredible palace there, decorated with ivory from Phoenicia. It was a symbol of his wealth and how much he embraced foreign culture.
But Dr. Phillips mentions that the prophets weren't too happy about that show of wealth and foreign influence, right?
No, they weren't. Prophets like Amos, they condemned all that luxury and what they saw as moral decay among the northern kingdom's leaders. They thought that embracing foreign gods and practices was like a slap in the face to their agreement with Yahweh. And they weren't afraid to call out the king and queen, even if it meant they could be killed. It shows us that these stories aren't just ancient history. They're about the timeless struggle between power, faith, and what happens when you stray from your values.
Right. They're still relevant today. Okay, so we've explored Manasseh with its dramatic landscape and all those pivotal moments in biblical history. Let's move on to Ephraim. What stories and characters do you think of when you hear about this region? For me, it's that feeling of safety, of refuge that Dr. Phillips talks about.
Yeah, me too. Ephraim, with all its rugged terrain and natural barriers, seems like a place where faith and survival were really connected. And the story of Shiloh, where they kept the Ark of the Covenant for so long, really shows that.
I love that image, the Ark, tucked away in those valleys, protected by all those natural barriers. It's a powerful symbol, isn't it? God being present in a world full of chaos and conflict.
It is. But we know that even Shiloh wasn't safe forever. The Philistines captured the Ark, and Shiloh was destroyed.
Which is a really important point. It reminds us that even the most sacred places, the places we feel safest, can be vulnerable.
Exactly. And losing the Ark, the fall of Shiloh, those events forced the Israelites to look at their own mistakes, how they had strayed from their covenant. It makes us think about questions we still ask today. How do we balance our faith with the reality of suffering and loss? How do we make sense of tragedy when it hits us where it hurts the most?
I think that's why these stories still mean so much to us, even thousands of years later. They speak to those human experiences we all share. So we've got faith, survival, and tragedy in Ephraim. Now, what about Benjamin? What stories stand out to you when you think about this region?
For me, Benjamin is all about David. Not just him becoming king, but how his story is tied to the geography of this area, especially that central plateau.
Yes. Before David even becomes king, we have Saul's reign and the Philistines pushing into Israelite territory. They get to Geba and Michmash. It's like setting the stage for the epic battles that David will fight later.
It is. And those earlier conflicts, like the one with Jonathan and his armor bearer, show how important this plateau was strategically. It could be used to attack or defend.
And it's interesting to think about where Ram is, where the prophet Samuel lived. Right. It's right at the crossroads of that plateau. He's literally in the middle of all the political and military action.
He is. It's almost as if the geography is shaping the story, bringing these key players together on the stage where the fate of the nation will be decided.
And when David becomes king, sets up his capital in Jerusalem, Benjamin becomes even more important. It's his buffer zone, his first line of defense.
Exactly. And the stories of David fighting the Philistines in this area are legendary. The Valley of Elah, where he kills Goliath, the Caves of Adullam, where he hides from Saul. These are places that are etched in the memory of the Jewish people.
And they're all connected to this small but vital piece of land. Even that conflict between Asa and Baasha that we talked about shows how important it was to control that central plateau. Whoever controls Ramah controls access to Jerusalem.
Right. It's a theme that keeps coming up throughout biblical history and even after. This small area of Benjamin has had a huge impact on the destinies of empires and nations.
So we have David, epic battles, political intrigue. And again, it all comes alive when we understand the lay of the land. It's like the hill country is this ancient stage where these biblical dramas keep playing out.
Yes, the landscape isn't just a background. It's an active force, shaping events, influencing decisions, silently witnessing the triumphs and tragedies of the people who live there.
It makes me think of that saying, geography is destiny. We've explored Manasseh, Ephraim, and Benjamin, each with its own unique character and stories. But what does it all mean for us today? Why should we care about the geography and history of this place?
That's a good question. I think there are a few reasons why it matters. First, it helps us understand the Bible better. The stories, the characters, the events, they all make more sense when we can picture the setting, the terrain, why those locations were so important.
Right. It's like watching a movie on a big screen versus on your phone. You get a much more immersive experience when you can see everything that's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And the second thing I think is it helps us appreciate the power of place in a whole new way. The land itself, it's not just a background, you know. It's a powerful force that shapes human history and culture and even religious beliefs.
I never thought about it like that, but it's true. The biblical hill country really shows us that. The landscape affected everything from military strategy to covenant ceremonies, even to the core of the Israelite faith.
And third, I think it makes us think about how geography, history, and faith are connected in our own lives. Where we live, the landscapes we're part of, they shape us in ways we might not even realize.
It's like those places become part of who we are, you know? They affect our worldview, our values, our sense of self. Just like the hill country shaped the people and stories in the Bible, our own environments do the same to us.
Yeah, they do. And understanding that can help us live more intentionally, more thoughtfully. Being aware of how what's around us influences who we are and who we're becoming.
So from our deep dive into the hill country, what are some of the key things we've learned? For me, it's that feeling of connection, the geography, the history, the faith. It's all intertwined. And when we understand one part, it helps us see the richness and complexity of the whole thing.
I agree. It's like we've been given a new way of looking at these stories. We're not just reading words on a page anymore. We're experiencing them in a whole new way.
It's like stepping right into the Bible, walking through those ancient landscapes. You can almost breathe the air and feel the weight of history all around you. And what's amazing is how the landscape reflects the themes of the Bible. You have these towering mountains that represent strength and majesty, but they also represent danger and isolation. Then you have the fertile valleys that symbolize abundance and life, but they're also vulnerable to attack.
It's like the land itself is whispering these ancient stories to us, reminding us of how powerful place can be.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? Are we paying attention to the landscapes around us today? Are we aware of how they shape our thoughts, our beliefs, our actions? I know I haven't been, but this deep dive has really opened my eyes.
That's a deep question, and I think it's something we all need to think about. In a world where we're so disconnected from nature, it's easy to forget the power of place, how it can shape who we are and what happens to us.
The biblical hill country reminds us that we're not just these abstract beings living in a void. We're rooted in specific places,
yeah.
And those places matter.
They shape our stories, just like they shaped the stories in the Bible. And understanding that can help us live more intentionally, more grounded, more aware of how our surroundings can both challenge and inspire us.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm left with this feeling of awe and a new appreciation for how powerful place can be. The biblical hill country, it's more than just old ruins and ancient writings. It's a living example of how geography, history, and faith are all connected. And it's a reminder that those connections are still relevant today, still powerful, still shaping our worlds.
Absolutely. Maybe this deep dive will inspire you to think about the places that have shaped your own story. What are those places that have influenced your beliefs, your values, your sense of self? Take some time to reflect on them and see what you might discover.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the hill country of the Bible. We hope you've gained some new insights and a fresh perspective on those ancient stories. Until next time, keep exploring.